Hello and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week we are discussing Barry Levinson's new film, The Alto Knights. Luke, take it away.
Cool. So, The Alto Knights is a 2025 crime drama directed by Barry Levinson and starring Robert De Niro in dual roles. Set in the 1950s, the film explores the rise and rivalry of two infamous New York mob bosses, Frank Costello and Vito Genovese. As power shifts within the mafia, personal ambition and betrayal drive a deep rift between the former friends. The film captures the tension and brutality of organized crime at its peak, weaving together themes of loyalty, legacy, and the cost of power. At its core, The Alto Knights is an exploration of how ego and survival intersect in the underworld. This one.
Thank you, Luke. So before we get into that, can I say why I wanted to watch this film?
Sure.
Four reasons. The first is De Niro, because he's my favorite actor.
For sure.
And it represented an opportunity to talk about a De Niro movie on the Phoenix Cinema Podcast, which we haven't done yet. So De Niro in dual roles.
For some reason.
Number two, what's his name? Pileggi. What's the writer's name? How am I blanking on it? It's something Pileggi. Is it Nick? I'm thinking of Nicholas. Is it Nick? Pileggi. Nicholas.
Yeah.
Nicholas Pileggi.
Who, oh, Goodfellas, Casino.
The only other.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it. Goodfellas and Casino. Those are the only other two De Niro movies he's ever written. Both classics of the gangster genre. Casino is one of my favorite films of all time. Number three, Barry Levinson. You know, this guy is, right, veteran of this entire industry. He's been around for a long time. And actually, I think this represents the fifth movie that he's directed De Niro in, which they're both in their 80s now, and that, in my opinion, makes this a collaboration. So I think that's super cool. Going back to, I think, 1996 was when they did their first film, Sleepers, together. And now, 2025, they seal that collaboration with this movie. I thought that was super cool. And finally, the producer is Erwin Winkler. Erwin Winkler is a legend. He's an absolute legend in this business. I mean, he has been around for...
I'm looking at his credits now, yeah.
Right? Isn't that
Rocky,
crazy?
Raging Bull, Irishman, Creed.
Yeah. Movies. Look how long this guy has been doing his thing. He was the producer of The Irishman as well, executive producer of The Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, the guy's credits are insane. And actually, he was also once a director, if I'm not mistaken. He directed only a few films in his entire career. And those films, I think the first film he ever directed was called Guilty by Suspicion in 1991, starring De Niro. Okay. And the movie that he made after that in 1992 was a movie called Night and the City, starring De Niro. So, you know, all to say, the credits of the people involved in this film, I mean, these are heavy hitters. So
for
I was
sure.
so
yeah.
excited and nervous to watch it. And also, it's been really badly reviewed. And it has flopped.
It's bombed.
Majorly. It's bombed.
Yeah. Well, I was the only one in my screening of this film.
Hoo-wee. Yep. There you go. There you go. They just don't have that pull anymore, which is sad. But I'll say this. I thought it was a good film. I actually enjoyed it. And your expression tells me otherwise, sir.
No. I don't think it was a bad film, but I don't think I'd class it as a good film.
Oh, you wouldn't? Okay.
No, I think...
Okay.
For me, it's just very uninteresting. I feel like nothing really exciting happens in this film. It clocks in at literally 2 hours exactly, but it feels longer than that. The film feels like it's dragging its heels, and I didn't like the script. I thought there was so much nonsense and so much pointless weight to it. There was just some conversations, like there's just off the top of my head, there's a conversation about the Mormons in the back of a car, and it's just it feels so redundant. And you know, you have these mob bosses all talking to each other, and they're almost like talking in riddles to each other, and it's just not very clean. There were things to like about it. I thought, even though De Niro, for some reason, is in this dual role, which I think adds nothing to the film, just as an aside, I think he's still good. You know, he does De Niro, and he does it very, very well. So yeah, I mean, I'm very curious to hear, like, your opinions on it.
Well, I mean, there's so much I disagree with you on there. But yes, I mean, De Niro is doing De Niro, and De Niro's an absolute fucking master, right? So what's so interesting about it as well is that, I mean, it kind of reminds, so similar to The Irishman, in my opinion, with The Irishman being a better movie, but it's a movie about old men made by old men. You know what I mean? So there really is a deliberate slow pace to this whole thing. I mean, with The Irishman, none of those people are in their prime. Scorsese, De Niro, Pacino, Keitel, Pesci, nobody. So it's a slow movie. The Alto Nights is a slow movie because none of these people are in their prime, especially Levinson and De Niro.
Sure.
So I don't mind the pacing of it, but for me, it was nice to see. It was nice to have, the way I saw it was, if The Irishman is Scorsese's final say, his sign off on the gangster genre that he helped, you know, blossom, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a sign off to the gangster genre for De Niro, the actor, you know, who also helped the genre to absolutely blossom, not as a director, but as a performer. And I liked it. I like him in it a lot. I think, yes, I agree with you. It's a little silly that he's playing two roles. We could have just got another actor, sure. But I guess when you are De Niro, you know, you get to do this when you're in your 80s, you know. And actually, I do feel like they are two very distinct characters. I liked, probably most of all, seeing De Niro play, is it Vito?
Yeah.
Playing the Joe Pesci side of things in the movie. You know, we rarely get that. De Niro's always the straight guy, unless he was young and playing Johnny Boy in Mean Streets, but he was always the straight guy, and everyone else was the raving lunatic around him. And it was nice to see him have that side of things. And I thought he did it really well.
Don't understand the creative choice of having him play these two characters, because it just feels weird, because it's so obvious that he's both of them. You know, it's like the makeup and all the prosthetics that they give him, they're not that good. I mean, they're good, but they're not good enough to like hide the fact that this is Robert De Niro we're looking at acting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was kind of like, yeah, you have to really suspend your disbelief and just go with it. Yeah, because if you nitpick on that, you're going to have a big problem for this movie. For sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a bit self-indulgent and it's a little silly. But I
think it's very silly.
But when you admire the guy as much as I do, I kind of, I'm willing to let it go. You know, again, I was just curious, what are you going to, are you going to be bad in anything, in any aspect of this? And I don't think he was, which is, to his credit, the idea of him playing dual roles when they're not even related, they're just friends, is super silly. But yeah. Is he bad? I don't think so. I think he does a good job with both roles.
Yeah, that I do agree with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Levinson does a good job. There is a part of me that wonders how Scorsese would have done things, you know? Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, he's good. I think it's technically, it's a really well-made film.
See, it's well-made, but it's also quite ugly. There's really odd choices, I think, kind of as it moves between different chapters of the story, there's like text that pops up, like almost like the chapter titles.
Yes.
And it's even just that text that they choose just feels like some default word font that they've just thrown up on there. And it feels like that they were throwing this up at really arbitrary times, and I didn't really understand it. Yeah, and just the way it was shot as well, it was a little jarring. It wasn't smooth at all. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh here, but you know, I definitely noticed it, the way that it looked, and I personally wasn't that impressed.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah,
like the color grading of a lot of it is quite. I don't know if it's just that I don't appreciate the style they were going for, but yeah, but I just didn't really like it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. No, I didn't find too much wrong. I mean, if De Niro's a master, Levinson is also a master. You know, again, he's been around for a long time, and I didn't find too much. There was one thing, and that was, so the movie starts with one of De Niro's characters basically getting shot in the head and surviving the assassination attempt. What annoyed me, the way it was filmed and staged, was how it's not just a shot in the head, move on. The moment he gets shot in the head, it goes into this weird, flashy, multiple, like, you know, very twitchy editing and jumping around. And I was like, why is it really so frayed?
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that as well.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on here? Just let him get shot and that's it. Yeah, it was a bit weird. But, I mean, that aside, I didn't find too much wrong with it. You mentioned something earlier about the dialogue being a bit unnecessary. I like that moment in the car with talking about the Mormons and bringing up that fact. That, to me, was... It didn't happen often enough, but it felt like those nice comic moments, you know, you're not sure if it's improvised or not, but it feels like Pileggi's writing. It's got that Goodfellas casino zing to it, where even Tarantino, you know, where all of a sudden they're talking about something that's completely unrelated to anything, and it becomes this comedic sort of moment. And then when Vito starts pounding on him because he's, all of a sudden, he's turned this conversation about Mormons into, I can't fucking stand Frank. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought that was quite cool.
That's fair. But this kind of, I mean, as you said, this kind of Tarantino-esque way of writing dialogue, the reason it feels weird in this film is because it's a very slow film.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's just a lot that feel bloated, that makes it feel bloated, and there's never really much going on. For example, like the whole part with Vito and his wife and like their whole fiasco and their like court case and everything like that, I just don't see what this has got to do with the bigger story that they're going for between Frank and Vito. I mean, they should have included it, but you know, this is like 20 minutes, half an hour of the film we're talking about.
Yes, yes. I understand that completely. I completely do. You know what I think it is, Luke? I think for me, like I alluded to earlier, watching De Niro in these films, specifically Casino, mm-hmm. is kind of what made me who I am. It was sure. like a blinking neon arrow pointing me down the path of what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I'm kind of willing to look past any sort of flaws or deficiencies because I just want, I'm very aware of how old he is. And I don't know how many more De Niro movies we're going to get. So I just appreciate the master doing what he does best while he still can. And if that means having these subplots and prolonged sort of, you know, mm-hmm. ventures that are going left and right instead of just getting to the core of the story, as long as they're doing it well, I don't know. I just really found an appreciation for it. I mean, his wife in that scene, I mean, she's like the go-to Italian goomba wife, you know, in every mafia film. I think she was in The Sopranos. She was definitely in The Irishman, you know, and it's like, and she's great, you know, she's great at it. And I don't know, I found this sort of, I guess it's a personal thing. I just really, because I expected it to be crap purely based on its performance in the box office and the reviews. So I was so pleasantly surprised when I'm like, hang on a minute, for sure this is not crap, you know?
You know, that I totally get that. And even though, as I said before, I don't think it's a great film, I mean, I don't even think it's really a good film, there is something so I'm still glad I watched it, because there's something just so great about watching De Niro do De Niro, even with the issues of everything around him, you know. It's just, there's something special about watching De Niro do what he does on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I'm kind of impressed. I'm like, this guy is 80, what? He's 82, I think. And mm-hmm. he is showing no signs of slowing down. This is the second of what will be three releases this year. Two films, one series, that one day come out on Netflix. Yeah. I mean, if I get to 82, I hope I'm still able to have like pure access to all my faculties and be able, I hope I'm able to still act sure. and perform, you know what I mean? And give half as good a performance as he does in this. Yeah, but I think it's very intentionally slow. I mean, this movie, Luke, is barely violent, right? It's a gangster film and there's hardly any violence.
There are some scenes of quite intense violence, but they're kind of sparse.
They're like really spread out.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was a Scorsese movie, he would have thrown in at least three montages of straight up massacre.
True. True. Yeah. I will say as well, I'm glad that, I guess this is technically like a biographical crime film, but they didn't mm-hmm. try and like go back any earlier and try and do like some CG with De Niro or like
de-aging.
Remember that scene? Remember that scene from The Irishman where it's like De Niro kicking that guy?
Yeah.
Or De Niro's like kicking that guy on the floor and it just looks really unnatural. They didn't anything like that.
Because he's still moving like an old man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm very happy they didn't attempt anything like that.
Agreed. Yes. Agreed. And I for sure expected it. So it was a nice surprise to not see that. Listen, I thought the production design was really nice. I loved the time period, the costumes, the cars. I thought they did a good job with that. I liked the score too. Did you notice the score?
I did notice the score. And I also noticed not just like the original score, but like the music that they used as well. I thought they were pretty great. Some really great tracks on there. Yeah.
Yeah. You said that when you went to the cinema, there was no one else there. When I went, it was purely an older crowd. There were people there,
I would not have expected anything else.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I was like, well, so, you know, there are people of a certain generation that will still show up for De Niro. Unfortunately, not enough to save a movie.
To be fair, it was a matinee, midweek matinee that I went to go see this. So, like, I wasn't expecting it to be busy, but I was expecting it to be completely empty.
I mean, to be honest, same here, except it was the only choice because it was the only showing that day. And it was like, oh, you know, yeah, it was the only one you could see.
Sure.
I also liked the performance of Cosmo Jarvis, Vito's gunman. What do you think about him?
Yeah.
He's the guy who assassinates or tries to assassinate Frank in the beginning.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, I feel like he doesn't play a massive role in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear he goes over through like some physical changes throughout the film. Did you notice that?
Well, he's very odd and he carries himself strangely, like he's all bunched up in the
neck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was
confused what was going on there, but
I think it's just a choice. Mm-hmm. I honestly think it was just a character choice. And I found it, yes, it's, you know, it's a big choice, but I found it quite funny. It's quite comic. I only know him from Shogun. Did you watch that? The latest series?
Not yet. No.
He's like the main guy in that, I guess. But he's up and coming. I mean, we're going to see him in Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey and Alex Garland's new film, Warfare. We're going to start seeing him everywhere. Yeah. But I really liked him. I thought he was, you know, as a supporting character, he was quite memorable.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, no one really gave a bad performance in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, that's really what is carrying this film on its shoulders. You know, it's the performances.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least for me, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's just weird, you know, watching it, because this, by all accounts, it should be a Scorsese movie. And I think if it was made at any other time, maybe earlier in their careers, it would have been, you know, and Vito would have been Joe Pesci, you know? It's just, yeah, it's, but it does feel like a sign-off. And I bet you dollars to donuts we will never see De Niro in another gangster movie again. And I think
it's becoming more and more unlikely, but
yeah. And you know, that really, I feel that loss, you know. And do you know what, it's probably the right choice. He's in his 80s for sure, but he returned to this genre that he inspired me so much in. And And I love it. You know, he dresses up his dogs and he takes them for walks. This is a gangster. You know, he couldn't do this in the earlier films. And then he sits there with his contact on a park bench. And after they're done talking business, he's talking about the dogs and just like, you know, my wife, you know, they're everything to her. Well, you know, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, I think that's just so charming and so funny.
This Frank Costello character that he plays, it does feel very different to the previous kind of mobster characters that we've seen De Niro in before. In the same way that Vito does as well, you know, because Frank's very kind of passive. And, you know, the whole premise of the film is that he's kind of trying to move away from the whole circuit, from the whole game. At least when you compare it to, you know, Goodfellas or something like that, it is quite a different approach to this kind of mob boss character that we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it didn't feel too dissimilar from his Sam Ace Rothstein in Casino. Again, you know, he felt much more, he's a calmer character in that, even when he's ordering security guards to break people's, you know, little fingers or hands in casinos, you know, he still has that calmness to him. But here, I think it's just purely age, you know, that adds that extra layer of passiveness even more. And I actually really enjoyed the whole final sequence of all the mob bosses getting together, but it's a setup. And on the way there, he's just like, slow, oranges. You know, I'm like,
yeah, I like that. But yeah. I have to say that the whole scene of all these, this crowd of mob bosses running back to their cars, it was a little goofy.
But you know what, Luke? I think that's the point. It's meant to be goofy. I think you're meant to laugh at that.
It's almost like taking these mob bosses down a level, isn't
yes,
it?
Completely, and yeah. making them look like idiots. Yes.
For sure.
And I've got to say, De Niro brings this energy to Vito. You know, when they park up and he doesn't give this guy a break, his henchman, his gunman. And he gets out of the car, and I love this moment from him. He slams the door, and he looks at the way he's parked, and he's like, look at the way he's fucking barked. And he just he makes this comment, and he throws his arms up, and I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, you know, so we're on opposite ends here, but that's okay. You understand why, on my end, at least. Mm-hmm. Shall we do pairings?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I want to say, like, I think it's still worth going to see this film, you know.
Oh, great.
Even though I'm quite
great.
Lukewarm about it, you know. Like I said, just to go see De Niro do what he does best is 100% worth watching.
Great, yes. And I absolutely agree. I don't think it deserves the pure vitriol that it's gotten, because there are far, trust us, far worse movies out there.
That's fair. You know, it's currently sitting at an average of 2.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd. And I think that's probably is a little harsh.
Yeah.
Low threes, yeah. I think, is maybe fair.
Yeah. I mean, I'd give it a 4, but yeah. All right. Do you mind going first on the pairings? Because I've been thinking about this for a while, and I'm still a bit like...
Yeah. Sure. So I would pair this one with Mean Streets.
Mm.
Mainly because I think watching it as a double bill, I just think it would be so great to see.
So good.
You know, the birth of Robert De Niro as we know
him.
And then like juxtapose that with, you know, him in what, okay, it might not be his final outing in this kind of character, but you know, the most recent one. I just think it would be great to see.
I bow down to that choice. I absolutely, what a juxtaposition when Johnny Boy to this. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, man.
And then if I could do a triple bill, it'd be Mean Streets, then Casino, then The Alto Nights, just to kind of like the beginning, the peak, and then the end.
Yes, and yeah, absolutely. And actually, that, you know, Casino was one of the ones I was thinking of, because I think when it comes to the portrayal of a friendship that gets completely eroded over the course of a film, I think Casino portrays that so much better than the friendship that dissolves between Frank and Vito in this movie. I think it's far more powerful in Casino. Especially the finale of the, you know, the end result of what happens to the both of them, I think is really powerful. Okay. I'm going to go with, you know, it could have been Casino. It could have been The Irishman, to be honest. I think any of them would make perfect pairings. But just to do something different, I think I'm going to go with Legend. Did you ever see Legend?
Okay.
The Tom Hardy movie... Plays twins.
No, I Am Legend's the other one. Yeah.
Just Legend, where he plays the Cray twins, the real life English gangsters.
Actually, I think I have seen this a long time ago. Maybe when it first came out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what is it, 2015? To be honest, there's not much to this. I just thought, let's just do something different. And it's.
Sure.
It's another actor playing dual roles. Again, this time they are brothers, but they are both very distinct. So he has to play them very uniquely to each other. One is calm. Mm-hmm. The other's a pure psychopath. I'm even going to be honest with you. I don't even remember too much about the film. I don't even know if it's good. But the writer and director, Brian Helgeland, is another brilliant writer and director who's been around for a long time. I'm pretty sure he wrote the movie Mystic River. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I don't think so.
A Clint Eastwood film, but it was basically the first adaptation of one of my favorite writers, Dennis Lahane, one of his books. And I'm actually rereading it again now. And
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's brilliant. But it's a great cast. You've got Taron Egerton in it very early. You've got Christopher Eccleston. It's, yeah, it might be worth watching again. I don't know. I don't know if it's any good or not. I can't bloody remember. So maybe it's not. I don't know.
Cool.
But cool. Yeah.
Definitely worth a rewatch. Yeah,
yeah, awesome. For sure. Lovely, lovely. All right, well, before we go, I will plug something. So speaking of gangster stories, there is a new TV series that just released on Paramount Plus called Mobland, created by Guy Ritchie, starring Tom Hardy from Legend, Pierce Brosnan and Helen Mirren. I'm in it. Episode 9, I believe, playing a taxi driver, and I share a scene and a couple of lines with actor Paddy Considine. I'm not too sure if it's any good. I've read a bad review of it, but this film had bad reviews too, so you know, you can't always trust those, I suppose. Anyway, I'm in it, and I think my episode is going to drop, I think, May 25th, so we've still got a while. And one more thing, my short film that I wrote called One in the Chamber has been selected at the Carmarthen Bay Film Festival in Wales, which is a BAFTA qualifying festival. And I feel very proud that we were selected into such a prestigious place. That's going to be May 19th to the 22nd. And I'm going to try and attend it. And I'll drop any further news or updates on that when or if it comes. But anyway, that's my plug.
Awesome.
Anything from you, Luke?
Nothing that exciting, I'm afraid.
No, why? You just
can't
keep being great.
With that. Can't compete
you
with
keep
that.
Keep being
really.
Great. All right, sir. Well, pleasure as always, my friend.
No, thank you.
And thank you for listening, everybody. Special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger. You can find more of his music on stefan-krieger.com. And our episodes, as always, are edited by Noah Anderson. If you like the podcast, please share it, spread the word far and wide. And then after you've done all that, go and watch a movie at the Phoenix Cinema. And I'll see you there.